Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Elements of Material Creation, Text 31. Correct? Yep. Drig Rupam Arka Vapur Atra Rantre Paraspara Sidyati Ya Swata Ke Atma Yad Esha Aparo Ya Adya Swayanubhutya Kila Siddha Siddhi. Drigrupa Markam Vaporatra Rantre.
Drigrupa Markam Vaporatra Rantre.
Parasparam Siddhiti Yasvatake.
Parasparam Siddhiti Yasvatake.
Atma Yadesham Aparo Yadya.
Atma Yadesham Aparo Yadya.
Swayanubhutya Kila Siddha Siddhi. Drigrupa Markam Vaporatra Randre.
Drigrupa Markam Vaporatra Randre.
Parasparam Siddhyati Yasvatake.
Parasparam Siddhyati Yasvatake.
Atma Yadesham Aparoya Adya.
Atma Yadesham Aparoya Adya.
Swayanubhutya Kila Siddha Siddhi.
Swayanubhutya Kila Siddha Siddhi.
Drigrupa Markam Vaporatra Randre.
Drigrupa Markam Vaporatra Randre.
Parasparam Siddhiti Yasvatake.
Parasparam Siddhiti Yasvatake.
Atma Yadesham Aparoya Adya.
Atma Yadesham Aparoya Adya.
Swayanubhutya Kila Siddha Siddhi.
Swayanubhutya Kila Siddha Siddhi.
The function of sight.
The function of sight.
As Adhyatma.
As Adhyatma.
Rupam.
Rupam.
Visible form.
Visible form.
As Adibhuta.
Arka,
of the sun.
Of the sun.
Vapur,
the partial image.
As Adidaiva.
As Adidaiva.
Atra,
Atra,
in this. Randre,
aperture.
Of the eyeball.
Of the eyeball.
Parasparam.
Parasparam.
Mutually.
Mutually.
Siddhyati.
Siddhyati.
Cause the manifestation of each other.
Cause the manifestation of each other.
Ya.
Ya.
Which.
Which.
Swata.
Swata.
By its own power.
By its own power.
Ke. In the sky.
In the sky.
Atma.
Atma.
The super soul.
The super soul.
Yat.
Yat.
Which.
Which.
Esha.
Esha.
Of these three features.
Of these three features.
Apara.
Apara.
Separate.
Separate.
Ya.
Ya.
Who.
Who.
Adya.
Adya.
The original cause.
The original cause.
Swaya.
Swaya.
By his own.
By his own.
Anubhutya.
Anubhutya.
Transcendental experience.
Transcendental experience.
Akila,
Akila,
of all,
of all.
Siddha,
Siddha,
manifest phenomena,
manifest phenomena.
Siddhi,
Siddhi,
the source of manifestation,
the source of manifestation.
Translation: sight, visible form, and the reflected image of the sun within the aperture of the eye all work together to reveal one another. But the original sun standing in the sky is self-manifested. Similarly, the Supreme Soul, the original cause of all entities, who is thus separate from all of them, acts by the illumination of his own transcendental experience as the ultimate source of manifestation of all mutually manifesting objects. Got it? Let's read the third one. Form is recognized by the function of the eye, and the eye's function is understood by the presence of perceivable form. This interaction of sight and form further depends on the presence of light provided by the demigods, whose service of universal management depends on the presence of those who are to be managed, namely, the living entities experiencing form with their eyes. Got it now? Okay, that's pretty good. Thus the three factors, adhyatma, represented by the senses such as the eye, adhibhuta, the sense object such as form, and adhidaiva, the influence of the controlling deities, exist in an interdependent relationship. The sun globe itself is said to be self-manifest, self-luminous, and self-experiencing. It does not share the interdependence of the senses and sense objects, although facilitating their function. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead facilitates the interdependent experiences of all living entities. For example, newspapers, radio and television reveal world events to the mass of people. Parents reveal facts about life to their children, teachers to their students, friends to friends, and so on. The government manifests its will to the people, and the people to their government. The sun and moon reveal the visual forms of all objects, and the perception of sound reveals audible form. The vibrations of particular type of music or rhetoric reveal the inner feelings of other living beings, and other types of knowledge are revealed by aroma, touch, and taste. In this way, through the interaction of the senses and mind with innumerable sense objects, different types of knowledge are acquired. All such informative interactions, however, depend on the supreme illuminating power of the Personality of Godhead. As stated in Brahma Samhita 5.52, Yachchakshuresha Savita Sakala Grahanam. Among all the planets, the sun is considered the eye of the Supreme Lord. The Personality of Godhead is eternally omniscient by his own transcendental potency, and thus no one can reveal anything to the Lord about anything. Still, Lord Krishna humbly accepts our prayers offered in Krishna consciousness. In conclusion, Lord Krishna clearly explains here that his sublime his sublime characteristics are completely different from those of the manifest universe. The Lord is therefore the supreme transcendental entity, free from all material influence. Drigrupam arkam vaguratra randre parasparam sidyati yasvata ke atma yadesham aparoya adya swayanu bhutya kila siddha siddhi. Sight, visible form, and the reflected image of the sun within the aperture of the eye all work together to reveal one another. But the original sun standing in the sky is self-manifested. Similarly, the Supreme Soul, the original cause of all entities, who is thus separate from all of them, acts by the illumination of his own transcendental experience as the ultimate source of manifestation of all mutually manifesting objects. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Niravishesha Shunyavadi Pastichyadeshtarane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasati Gauravaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpataribhyas jagripa sindhubhyevacha paditanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Just some days ago, we discussed, essentially, this very subject. Here it is being spelt out by Lord Krishna to Uddhava. This is the Uddhava Gita. Here it is being spelt out, but the basic points were addressed in one or two of the previous verses, or three even. The basic point being that Krishna is independent and nobody else is. Rather, everyone is dependent on him, and they may be dependent on others also, but they're certainly ultimately dependent on him. But he is not dependent on them ever at all in any way. This is the basis for Lord Krishna's sixth famous opulence as Bhagavan. Bhagavan, Bhaga means opulence, Van means one who possesses. Krishna's Bhagavan in that he possesses all the opulences which are essentially counted as six. All beauty, fame, knowledge, strength, wealth, and sixth, we're saying. I mean, there's no specific order to them, but renunciation. Krishna has complete wealth. Any money you or I may have in our pockets, in our bank accounts, in the drawer at home, wherever it may be, any money you or I may have is actually Krishna's. He's loaned it to us. End of story. Yeah, in your, you may have stitched it into your mattress if you're one of those extremists. But actually it's on loan from Krishna. And when we leave our bodies, he will take it back. Or it may be distributed to various other people like that. But certainly, it cannot be truly considered ours as just like that is the end of what the money is, and it has no existence beyond being ours. It has an existence beyond being ours. We may spend it, we may lose it, or later on when we pass away, it will go to someone else, some other people. So therefore you cannot say in that unequivocal way, it is mine. Ultimately it's Krishna's, and he's loaned it to us. And when he's going to take it back, well, that just depends. You never know. One day you might wake up and surprise, surprise, he took it all away already. Unexpectedly. So anyway. But Krishna, he is supremely renounced. Well, he has these six opulences in full. He has all beauty, fame, wealth, knowledge, strength, like this. And he has all renunciation. All renunciation. We also have some renunciation. We renounce various things from time to time. Shortly, we will renounce the morning program, so to speak, and go on to the prasadam program. Then when that is finished, we will renounce that and go on to our daily activity program, and so on and so on like that. Earlier this morning, we renounced our sleeping program. So we also renounce, but not like how Krishna renounces. He can renounce everyone and everything permanently, completely. So therefore, it is considered one of his opulences. He has all renunciation in full. And in the same sense as we mentioned with wealth, in the same sense, whatever renunciation we may be able to manifest is really just coming from him. In material life, it is more a process of accepting, rejecting, accepting, rejecting, accepting, rejecting. One young lady devotee told me just a matter of a few weeks ago, she was she had just had a child, her first child. Devotee. Just had a first child, and she said, what an experience. I won't do it again. These are what are called, in some circles, famous last words. Never again. Little while later, you do it again. In so many situations, it is like that. Some people, they get married and they think everything is very nice, but over the course of time it becomes not nice, and even in some cases it becomes very dramatically unpleasant, and they become so disturbed, and even they end up hating the other person, even violently hating the other person. And they say, never do it again. And then a little later they do it again. So on the material level, renunciation, the type of renunciation we may have from time to time, after some time, that whatever it is we were announcing, the desire for it comes back. Yes. So, you know, so many things are like that. sometimes a person overeats and ends up feeling bad, and they say, I'll never overeat again. And then after a little while, they do. So this is life on the material level. Alternating acceptance and rejection. And then again, accepting and then rejecting. And it just goes on and on. But when the devotees, when a person really becomes connected with Krishna, then they're able to actually completely renounce everything material without there being the danger or the happening of supposedly renouncing and then going back. Yes. So Krishna then, so that is through the devotee's connection with Krishna, and through being properly connected with Krishna and having the proper relationship with Krishna and therefore the proper relationship with everything else. Therefore the devotee, by Krishna's mercy, can become permanently renounced from material things. Krishna is always permanently renounced. He's always permanently renounced. Krishna, when he comes to this world, he does not think that, oh, this Chatsworth seems quite nice. Maybe I should settle down here. I mean, in say, Unit 3, in one of the flats. I'll get one of the flats. Settle down. That's it. Krishna never feels like that when he comes. He's always completely renounced. At the same time, everyone and everything is completely dependent upon him. But he is never dependent upon them. Of course, there's also the point, out of love, Krishna becomes dependent on his devotees. But that's a different thing, really. In this context, everyone is dependent on Krishna, and Krishna is not dependent on anyone. And the others are, along with being dependent on Krishna, the others are dependent on each other in different ways also. So, this is what's being addressed here. I see it was also addressed yesterday, or introduced yesterday. The Adiyatmik Purusha, Adidaivik Purusha, Adibhautik Purusha. Some few days before, we tried to explain these three concepts in terms of how they're described earlier in Srimad Bhagavatam. That Adiyatmik Purusha means the soul, the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul. The Adibhautik Purusha means the body of the conditioned soul. And the Adidaivik Purusha means the demigods who are controlling the senses and the functioning in so many ways of the body and the soul who is embodied within the body. Here it's being described slightly differently, but the principle's the same. Adiyatmik, represented by the senses such as the eye. Adibhuta, the sense object such as form. And Adidaiva is again the demigods. It is the same principle, but just slightly different application in terms of Adiyatma and Adibhuta. The point being made here in the verse by Lord Krishna himself is that there is sight, the power, sensory power we all have. Some of us more than others. And some of us had it more previously. But anyway, we still have some. So there's the power of sight. We all have that. And then there are the things which are seen. And then there is the demigods who are controlling both the sensory powers and the things which are seen. That's their job. And then there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the way it's been expressed by Lord Krishna in the verse is that sight, without something to see, you might not even know that you have sight. If you happen to be, if it were possible, in a room which, you know, is painted matte black with no reflection and is totally self-enclosed, totally, and there's literally no source of light whatsoever, then of course the body actually emits a little light because of the presence of the soul. Anyway, that's sort of another thing. But theoretically or in principle, we can understand. If we were in such an environment, we would not see anything. We would not see the walls, the floor, the ceiling. We would not see ourselves. And in that sense, our sense of sight at best would be totally unable to function, and at worst we might not even know we had a sense of sight, because there is no object for it to interact with, for it to see. Yeah. I mean, in a certain sense, not exactly really, but in a certain sense, when it's a very clear day, if you look into the sky, what are you seeing? Nothing. Space. Well, you are seeing something, actually. There's all sorts of sort of particles in the sky. And that's... But in a sense, you're seeing nothing. There's nothing for your eye to focus on. So the point Lord Krishna's making here is that sight, the sense of sight, without form, without something to be seen, a sense object, sense of sight, it has no standing. It has no standing. And form, so the eye's function is understood, appreciated by the presence of perceivable form, and form is recognized by the function of the eye. This interaction of sight and form further depends on the presence of light. In other words, it really means the demigods. Because the sun, when we talk about the sun in this context, we don't mean that big ball of fire in the sky. We mean the personality, Surya, because that big ball of light in the sky is being controlled by him. And I don't know if he has an on-off switch, but it is under his control. Yes. So then sight may be there, form may be there. And even we mentioned that our bodies emit a little light. And why is that? Where does it come from? Well, ultimately it comes from the soul, actually. But in another sense, it comes from the sun. Our body, we're in the sun, we're in light. Where did the light come from? It came from the sun. and our bodies pick it up and therefore emit a little light. Just like it is explained that wood, you can light wood, fire, and then you'll have fire, and then the wood, so the wood is considered a type of fuel for fire. But the real understanding is that that wood was standing in the sun for hours every day for years, and it picked up the sun's light. And the process of burning wood means simply we are releasing the stored power of the sun, which is being picked up by the wood. An interesting perspective. But this is the Vedic understanding of how fire functions in terms of burning wood. Yes. So, so sight without light can't function. Form without light can't be seen. And light without sight and forms to be lit is just sort of existing in a vacuum and is kind of like a non-phenomenon, certainly not very practical at all. The example which is given earlier in the Bhagavatam, using the same terminology and the same principle, which we mentioned the other day, is that the adhyatmic purusha is the conditioned soul, the adhibhautik purusha is the material body of the conditioned soul, and again the adhidaivik purusha is the demigods who are giving the sensory capabilities to the body, which the soul is then using and making so many arrangements within this world. That the conditioned soul without a body, because the conditioned soul is conditioned deeply and more or less completely conditioned, therefore the conditioned soul without a material body is not able to function, because the conditioned soul, basically at least, only has the capacity to function materially. Only has that capacity. Of course, there is latent, deep in the nature of the soul, there is Jivera Swarupaya Krishna and Nityadas, that nature to be the eternal servant of Krishna. But it is buried deep within the heart, within the nature of the living entity, and is covered over practically completely. So therefore, the conditioned soul without a material body cannot function, doesn't know what to do. Serve Krishna, it's meaningless, totally meaningless. So the conditioned soul needs a material body. Then, yes, now I can work and do things, and now I can live. And we mentioned how people become dependent. My maternal grandparents, they were elderly, they were in their 80s. My grandfather died in hospital. They were both in hospital in the process of dying. And my grandfather died first. They told my grandmother, and she just said, "Oh." Within a few hours, she was gone too. Because of that interdependent relationship. And even we see some people, they lose their husband, wife, somebody, and some of them commit suicide And some of them, if they don't commit suicide, they enter into severe depression because they were dependent. Someone loses their money. We've mentioned before the richest man in Germany up until I think 2008. On paper he had 11 billion euros, but a lot of it was in the form of what people owed him and assets like buildings and things which he was paying off. And then some financial crisis struck. All the people who owed him money, all of them became unable to pay him any money. Therefore, he was unable to keep paying for his buildings that he owned, so he lost all of them. He ended up owing 1 billion euros. Between all of us, we don't owe 1 billion euros. So he ended up in a minus position. It was too much, he committed suicide. So people become dependent, and the soul is dependent on the body, and the body of course is dependent on the soul. Without the soul, the body is a dead body, and the demigods who are supplying the power of sight and the different capacities that our bodies have, even Srila Prabhupada explained, there is a demigod whose job it is to control the blinking of our eyes. That demigod just acted. It's a big job. You might think, oh, blinking of the eyes. But there are billions of people and so many other living entities who blink. It's very important to blink. So, yeah. So your eyes do not dry. It's what happens with people who work with computers. You know, they just such rapt attention, they don't blink enough. And they get dry eyes. This is also why fish don't blink. Because they're in the water, they don't need to. Their eyes stay moist, so a fish don't blink. Radharani prayed to become a fish, so when Krishna comes to the Yamuna, she could just look from the water without blinking, because fish don't blink. So there's this interdependency, and the demigods, if they didn't have sensory functions to control and people to control and situations to manage, they would be unemployed. So they would just simply, they would become useless. Just like the Bhagavatam says. The Bhagavatam says, in a family, the young man, the husband, likes to think he is the head of the family. As part of the male condition. He likes to think like that. And while he's young, he's working, providing money, and everyone's dependent on him, and he gets that a good feeling from that. They're all dependent on me. See, I am the head of the family, actually. Whenever they need something, they come to me. But then later, when he's old, he retires. Of course, then, according to real human civilization, he's meant to leave home and be a vanaprastha, become a sannyasi, and make a real contribution to the whole of humanity in that way. But in material life, people become old, and it explains in the Bhagavatam, too old to work, stops working, now he just sits at home, and he becomes, now he's not contributing, now he's just a liability, he's eating, it costs money, and, you know, he needs new things sometimes, it all costs money, He's a liability. And so the man in that condition becomes rejected, just seen as some useless old anachronism who's just simply taking up space, costing money, and wasting our time and making no contribution. So the demigods would end up like that. And they would just sit around and what? I don't know, watch television and eat and become fat in their old age because they've got nothing to do. So in this context, there is this interdependence. But where is everything coming from? It is coming from Krishna. So ultimately, the demigods are dependent on Krishna. He's given their powers. As we mentioned the other day, we have been demigods. We had great powers. Maybe one of us was the demigod who controlled the blinking of eyes. It's a big job, even though it seems insignificant. So maybe, surely, we have all been demigods, but we lost those powers because they were not really our powers. They were just on loan from Krishna while we were doing a particular service to Krishna. And later the service was finished and the powers that came with the service were withdrawn. And here we are now in Chatsworth. Yeah, so it applies in this context also. The senses, the sense objects, and the demigods. None of them can really function nicely, completely, satisfactorily without the other, without the others. And they're all dependent on Krishna. They're all dependent on Krishna. But he is never dependent. As Krishna says to Lord Brahma, Aham evasam evagre, nanyad yat sadasat param, pastyad aham yad etach cha, yo vishishyeta sosmyaham. In the beginning there was nothing by me, but me. At this stage, everything is dependent upon me. Whatever exists is dependent upon me. And when everything is withdrawn again, I will exist myself. So he's independent. Everything is dependent upon him. That is the situation. Therefore, actually this is discussed at length in Tattvasandarbha. It's a very interesting discussion. How, because it's particularly referring to the super soul, Paramatma, that particular form of the Lord, and how he is independent. Because he's completely independent in the sense that he doesn't have devotees, exactly. Krishna has devotees. The super soul is a functional form of the Lord within the material world, just managing things. Of course, he may have devotees in the sense there may be people who are attached to him, but no one has an eternal relationship with the super soul. Everyone has an eternal relationship with Krishna, who is the source of the super soul. But in a very direct sense, when you, all great devotees, go back home, back to Godhead, the super soul who is sitting there right now, he will not go with you. He will stay. Actually, he will become unmanifest. But he'll not go with you. There you'll go to Krishna. And you'll be relating with Krishna, Bhagavan, The super soul is that functional managerial form of the Lord within this material world. And when the entire material world is wound up at the end of Brahma's life, then Shiradakshai Vishnu, who is the supersoul within the heart, within every atom, he is withdrawn into Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and then the universes are destroyed, and Garbhadakshai Vishnu is withdrawn into Mahavishnu. This is what happens, actually. So they are temporary, functional forms of the Lord. So, everything that is going on is dependent on the Lord. He is not dependent on anyone or anything, except in the special sense of Krishna with his pure devotees. Ultimately, it really means particularly the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the same type of relationships in which Krishna becomes dependent on his devotees. Those types of relationships are not really there outside of Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan, Gokula Vrindavan. Not really. In Vaikuntha, everyone is in the mood of being the servant, and Krishna's the master, and he's in the mood of being the master. Of course, there's very deep affection between the Lord and the devotees, but not like in Vrindavan, where Krishna forgets he's God, being overwhelmed by the love of the devotees, and sees himself just in terms of the different relationships. Oh, I am Mother Yashoda's little boy. He actually thinks like that. He actually sees himself like that. He is not just putting on an act just to sort of patronize her. Oh, she's very nice. She thinks I'm her child. I'll act like I'm her child so as not to disappoint her. Not like that. He actually feels he's her child and becomes completely absorbed in that. And just like we see in the pastime of Lord Brahma, the stealing of the cowherd boys and calves, he learnt his lesson. He saw that all the... He hid all the cowherd boys and calves, came back, saw they were still there. And then they all transformed into four-armed Vishnu forms. And he realized his terrible mistake. And he came and apologized and begged forgiveness from Krishna. Krishna, however, was in the mood of a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, completely. And now here's Lord Brahma with four heads, eight eyes, and bowing down and offering prayers and crying in front of Lord Krishna and apologizing to Krishna. And cowherd boy Krishna was thinking, what's going on here? Who is this four-headed man? Why is he bowing to me? Why is he offering prayers to me? There must be some mistake, because I'm just a cowherd boy. Why is he doing this to me? But he seems very distressed. I don't want to make him more upset by just going away or refusing him. So I will wait till he finishes. But I hope he finishes soon. Because I have important business. I have to go back and finish my lunch. Oh, that's important. As we said, prasadam takes preference. Takes precedence. So, Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes.
I have a question from the sixth canto.
Vishnu Tattva. Really? Which verse?
That's towards the end of the...
Give us a reference, an actual reference.
18th chapter.
And verse number?
Verse number.
Huh?
I'm not sure.
Can you look it up? Anyway, the thing is, she's Shakti Tattva. Lakshmi Radharani, she's an expansion of Srimati Radharani, who is Shakti Tattva. Shakti Tattva is, in one sense, part of Krishna, part of Krishna's entity. We're also Krishna's energy, but we're separated. But Lakshmi, Srimati Radharani, is part of Krishna. She is his pleasure potency. It's different from us. We're not like directly parts of Krishna himself. We are by definition separated. Although we share the same nature qualitatively, Satchitananda. So it could be said in that sense, she's like Vishnu Tattva, as part of Krishna's person. But then again, generally you find she's described as Shakti Tattva, in a more specific sense, because she is also different. She is different. So without seeing the reference, that's what I'd say.
Yeah, you know when the Kum Shivananda.
When what?
Kum Shivananda's ritual.
Oh.
The praying to Lakshmi.
I see. Well, you know. One thing we could say is that when people pray to people, they don't want to understate the position of the person they're praying to. If anything, they may overstate. Like in the Bhagavatam, there are Hiranyakashipu's prayers to Lord Brahma, and he addresses him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's there in the Bhagavatam. Of course, Brahma is not. So it's not that Brahma is, I mean, it's not that Hiranyakashipu is making a point which we should learn from, you know, that, oh, actually Brahma is the Supreme Lord. But we're just seeing, really, the consciousness of the person offering the prayers. So it may well be the same there. Anyway, give us a verse reference. Be interesting to see.
Thank you much. I just wanted to clarify this concept of Adi Atma, Adi Bhauta, Adi Daiva. Is this? Can you also speak of this in terms of the different sense perception and their sense objects, like the sense of hearing, the object of hearing, and the ether, which is, the ether would be Adi Deva.
Ether. Sound travels in ether. It's more the demigods who control the functions, the Adideva. The element, it passes through like touch, through earth, or as well, no, smell through earth. That is it was described a little earlier. It has a specific position. Means, I mean, in this context. But the Adi-Daivik is the demigods who are controlling the function, and the Adi-Bhautik is the forms. So the sound itself is Adi-Bhautik, because it's the form, so to speak. Yeah, the manifestation. It passes through ether. It's kind of like a different part of the picture, part of the greater picture. But also, without ether, there wouldn't be any sound. When there's no ether, then even if, you know, you shout, if you shout in ether, there won't be any sound. But if you shout in a vacuum, if you shout in a vacuum, there won't be any sound. In a complete vacuum. Not just a vacuum like, you know, what is, you know, conceived of as such scientifically, but an actual vacuum. Because sound needs ether to travel. Without earth, there'll be no taste.
So the earth, water, fire, and ether, they would be part of the paraphernalia that the Adi-Deva control.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And just one other question, you mentioned that the soul has some light. The body absorbs light from the sun. Is that light of the soul and the body two different things? Like we hear of sometimes spiritual personalities as being effulgent. Is that light coming from the soul, or is the other light which is stored in the body from the sun?
It's more from the soul. You know, we notice when a person dies, the body loses its effulgence because the soul is gone. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.